Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Guten Morgen, Darren. Guten Morgen.
And me.
Guten Morgen, Amelia.
We're really
Guten
excited.
Morgen,
today.
Chopped liver.
We actually, yeah, I know, thank you. We actually were sitting here a bit flabbergasted that we actually haven't had you on our podcast so far already, Darren. And a lot of our people know who you are, so we're going to get straight into saying hello to Darren. Hey, welcome
nice to
have Dorothy and the Dealer.
Nice to have you on board, dude.
Great to
well,
have you on board.
Well, hello. And, I mean, there's so many good people to choose from, so, you know. I'm not offended at all.
There is. But I'm offended that you've never listened to our podcast.
That is not an accurate statement.
Well, when we just dropped on you that you have to talk to us about your favourite song, you're like, I'm not singing, I don't want to do it. So tell us what your favourite song is.
What's your favourite song, mate?
Darren? Or a song that you love, even if
and
it's
you
an
also just
song.
Said to me that you have a great singing voice before we came on. So what is your favourite song?
Okay, you're embellishing little things a little bit there, but
what's new?
What is my favorite song? Yeah. I don't know if I have a favorite song. I mean, there's so many good ones.
Give me a good one.
But okay, if I'm truly honest, here where I'm living at the moment, you know, we have a bit of a community here. And one of the flavors was a duet actually between Elton John and George Michael for Don't Let the Sun.
Don't let the sun.
Go down on
go
me.
Go down on me, yeah.
Don't yeah, that one.
That's it.
That's
ladies and gentlemen,
song.
Mr. Elton John. Yeah, great fucking
that's
song.
That's a great track.
Yeah. You know, I sing that every Friday night with a mate of mine, Matthew Guska, after a few beers. And we put
he
on the radio.
So there,
but there's that and Africa. Gonna take a lot to take me away from you. Yep.
Yeah, don't like the
there's
sun go
nothing
down
but 100 men no more. Oh, come on.
You know
that,
what?
That is,
you don't give up
song.
Your day job.
That's a fucking great song. So, yeah, when we get really, we've had we're three or four in for me. He's probably about 10. When we're like, I get drunk on the smell of a barman's fart. So if I'm two or three beers in.
So would I think. Yeah,
and you start singing that stuff, it's like. Anyway, so how's it going? Where are you at the moment?
I'm currently at Zaytuna Farm, Permaculture Research Institute of Australia in the Channon, which is Northern Rivers, New South Wales.
How's it going up there?
About an hour inland of Byron Bay. It's beautiful. It's approaching winter, which means the sun comes out in winter for us. We have 26-degree days, not lots of sunshine, although the nights are quite coolish.
Yeah.
And it's nice and quiet out here. I'm in the country. I'm away from the major population centres. Mm-hmm. Got clean air and I've got good quality rainwater and we grow some of our own food here. And
so are you growing, is it totally sustainable?
We're not totally growing our own food. That would require a concentrated operation. And we're more an educational institution rather than a production farm.
Right.
We don't sell to the public, but we demonstrate.
Right. And then, No, I'm being rude. Go ahead.
Well, what I think we need to do is backtrack because I know that some people know who you are, Darren, and will understand straight away why we're talking about this, but other people won't. So do you want to introduce Darren in terms of how you
So, yeah, I met Darren around about 1990. I think it was about 1990. No, let me think. We had the center. It was about 1996, I think, when I met Darren first, because Darren had come through one of the centers I was in charge of in Mount Lawley, and we were doing the beta release technique. And
that was after that.
No, it wasn't.
No, it had to have been post 2000, I reckon.
It was.
Yeah, but remember when we met, and then I'd said. No, we'd met before and you came to Mount Lawley to a centre and you had an alignment on the bench.
Yes.
Now,
that would have been around 2000, I reckon.
No, I couldn't. Would it?
Anyway.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was. But anyway, so I met Darren then and then a number of years later, I said, look, I really need a personal trainer. My PA said to me, oh, look, get in contact with this guy, Darren. Hey. And I was like, cool. And then when I went and met Darren, it was like we met each other. We'd known each other before, obviously, from what we were doing before. And then we started to connect and talk about how we saw life and the universe and everything else. And it was actually a really beautiful connection. And I loved getting trained by Darren And so, yeah, that was really...
How long did that personal training last?
I don't know. But Darren was a very good personal trainer.
Was he?
Yeah. Well, he was very good at making sure you got the technique right, because that's what screws things up. You know, I just... last week, I had a PT come into my gym at my home to train me and Mike to just see that we were getting stuff right. And he got me to tweak shoulder raises, and he fucking damaged my arm. Like, damaged my shoulder. So my shoulder's been not good since I had a cortisone injection about 8 months ago, and he actually put it out again. I'm like, not happy, no. Jan.
Did you tell him about that shoulder before you started training?
Yeah. But that's the problem. Like, it seems now there's so many PTs out there, they're just pumping them out, and they're not really educating them on, because, you know, so you look at some of these PT, like F45 and some of those other ones, there's young guys in there encouraging people to do stuff that they just physically should not be doing.
Yeah. You know, so he wasn't connected enough with you.
Yeah.
Darren, I think maybe it'd be a good time just to give us, like, I know you talk about your story and life for you and what happened for you. Do you want to give like I know you don't do abridged very often, but could you give us an abridged version so people who don't know you know a little bit about what's happening?
Yeah.
What happened?
Okay, the very abridged version is I went from an academic life to a physical training life through martial arts and in the military. And I think I was just got out of the military when I met you, Mitch. That's how I think I know that it was 2000 or just after 2000.
Right.
Because I don't think I was in the army at the time.
Right.
And
you actually showed a great photograph a couple of weeks ago of you with a what was that? Was that an M16 or?
That would have been an Australian Steyr rifle.
Steyr rifle, yeah. Great shot.
And so from the army, it was actually during the army that I had made a major motorcycle accident, and I smashed my pelvis and I had to learn how to walk again. And in rehabilitating myself, I got discharged from the army and I became a personal trainer using the knowledge that I was acquiring. And as I was training people, I realized that they had nutritional problems.
Mm-hmm.
Which would take them out of shape. And so they had to be addressed in order to get them into physical condition again. And also, as I was training them and addressing their nutritional issues, I found that there were emotional drivers behind their eating habits. And when I looked also at those emotional drivers, I found that there were belief systems behind those as well. So I discovered that there was this multi-tiered element to an individual, and that you had to reach the individual on those different tiers in order to effect a full transformation so that they could fully heal and come back into into presence with themselves and into health with themselves on the mental, emotional, physical plane of being. And it was what actually led me down that path was through my own regeneration, was encountering the disciplines of nature cure, natural hygiene, and biogenics, the philosophies on all of them, which are that the body is self-healing when the laws of life are aligned with, obeyed. And that dovetails in with basically the ancient spiritual teachings, and even modern spiritual teachings for any modern spiritual initiate. They sooner or later discover natural law, and that that brings everything into congruence when they're prepared to follow it. And so that's the basis of who I am and what I do with people and what I teach and what I like to speak about.
Mm. Great. Cool.
So I thought you had a question there. So, so basically then now you in terms of sorry, let me just – now I'm just a bit lost. Give me one second.
What's wrong with you? Okay, can I ask a question?
Yeah, go and ask a question while I think about what
So it seems that, you know, information is more accessible, Darren. There is a movement towards people starting to understand food, its effect on us, bad foods, their effects on us, corporations, food is one of the biggest fucking drivers. It's one of the biggest economic drivers, industries in the world. And one of the things that I've noticed, I was listening to a great 15-minute talk by Graham Hancock a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, technologically we have built a really fucking extraordinary society. Like, we can talk to someone over the other side of the world from a wristwatch, you know, literally over the other side of the world. But he said, we've also built a very vulnerable society, especially when it comes to food. Because if the food chain stopped within 3 days, most people have enough food to feed the family and themselves for 3 days. Within 3 days, we would start to experience some level of starvation. Within 7 days, this is globally, within seven yep. days, we would now be in a situation where we have not got enough energy to, and nobody, none of us know how to hunt. We've moved away from that scenario of understanding how to hunt and how to feed and how to grow and do all that sort of stuff. So as much as in some ways, so then he said within 2 weeks, you would have mass extinction starting to occur, you know, around the beginning of mass extinction around the world if the food sources cut out.
Yep.
So it seems like
the supply lines.
The supply lines, yep. So it seems like in one way we have a huge push towards understanding food, and but in another way we're still at a very vulnerable point in time. You know, yes. are we being asked? I mean, even are you saying we need to go back to that, or what is it you see we need to do to be able to secure who we are as a society? You know, to be able to become more sustainable, because that's what sustainable means, right? It is to sustain life, right?
Yeah, and we're even moving. There's nothing wrong with the word sustainable if it's used in the right way, but we're moving towards use of the word regenerative now more than sustainable.
Mm.
And the common adage is that if you said your marriage was sustainable, you wouldn't think it was very good. So, but we like to use the term regenerative. But sustainable in its original sense really meant that we were replacing more than we were using, and also allowing sufficient recovery or sufficient development, you know, so that evolution can continue. I mean, and regenerative means that we're always getting more
right
from our input. So, yeah, it's a complex issue.
Mm.
Because I think the big issue is that too many people are disconnected from nature and the natural world and natural mm. systems. They're even disconnected from themselves. And it's because of that we allow and have allowed and would continue to support systems that actually further increase that separation.
Mm.
Or actually place us in that place of, you know, or put us into that place of vulnerability
mm.
where those systems are prone to collapse
mm-hmm.
and they're not distributed equitably.
Mm.
And not only are they prone to collapse and not distributed equitably, but they actually destroy the environment which we depend on for our survival. And in destroying the environment, the foods which are grown out of those areas become mutually deficient anyway.
So what do you mean by that, Darren? Explain that.
Explain which part?
Explain the whole, it's affecting the environment, how, and
the number one destructive influence on the planet is monoculture, agriculture, by far. This is not just, you know, a small percentage.
It's like 40% massive. Or something. Yeah, it's huge. Yep.
Absolutely massive. Then it's agroforestry.
Right.
Right.
You know, deforestation of the earth, industry, you know, deforesting the earth. So mm-hmm. it's industry in, you know, that's deforesting the earth is the next major damager of the environment. But mm-hmm. monocultural agricultural cropping. So monoculture is growing one crop or one type of plant over a broad area.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which nature doesn't do anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Nature is an ecosystem, so it works with a diversity of species that supports that food chain. So it supports the soil, it supports the plant from that soil. It has an atmospheric effect and it has a hydrology effect. So, if, you know, in the water cycle. So from the soil to the atmosphere, that plant is the medium which harnesses all those forces. And there are multiple plants and multiple organisms that go into the production of that food or of that plant which becomes food. And so when you simplify it, you are taking out all the different translators of energy that are part of that ecosystem. So every single organism in nature and every single structure is a translator in some way of incoming and outgoing energy streams. And energy is synonymous with information. And so energy and information are basically what our foods are built from and what they become, including for our bodies. And the aspect of us which utilizes that information is consciousness. So when we simplify the ecosystem into something which is very, very unnatural, you weaken the ecosystem because there's not enough supporting influences to translate the necessary energy information for the evolution of just that one crop alone, let alone all the other species that are dependent on that ecosystem. And so because of that, you produce an inferior variant. So nature seeks the progressive strengthening of all life forms by continually weeding out the weakest. And so the pest attack on crops is nature simply weeding out the weakest. But we think we have one up on nature, so we can then create these nasty things called pesticides and other chemicals to defend the crop from nature's intention to just wipe it out of existence.
But wouldn't, I mean, doesn't the, doesn't the argument come in there then, if we don't do this, we're not going to be able to feed everybody? And, but at the same time, I was watching a David Attenborough show a couple of weeks ago, which was absolutely fantastic. And he was pointing out that nature is telling us what to do, that we need to go back to reforest and replant. And if we do that, we're actually going to have, you know, because, I mean, Hutchinson's ratio is saying that we're going to get to about 9.5 billion people. I remember talking to Dean Martini about this a couple of years ago. And then he said, then we will actually start to drop off and depopulate. And so, but so doesn't it say then that there's not enough food sources to be able to feed us? I mean, which argument is correct? Is it what's correct?
Well, it depends on which lens you're looking through, really. But I don't agree with it. I think there is enough food to feed everybody. The problem is a distribution problem. A lot of food gets buried in the ground simply because the supermarkets reject it, for one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of food that goes to waste because it doesn't get sold by its use-by date, two, and is dumped. And then there's food that, you know, there's also food that gets dumped in the ocean because it's been subsidized by the government and the markets don't support its, you know, support it being bought. So you get grain tankers or tankers full of grain just dropping it in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
You know, because the market doesn't support, you know, it being bought, and they're not going to give the stuff away because that doesn't suit the economics of the situation. So the problem is distribution. And in fact, all the world's populations could be self-reliant and resilient in that sense, and therefore immune from a worldwide catastrophe if they started to take care locally of their own food production, as was always the case.
Originally.
It's only globalization that, it's just globalization that has changed that.
So
the line in the pockets of the few.
And the funny thing is like when we're talking about lining the pockets of the few, so it lines the pockets of the few, but how much can you buy? You know, like how many fucking cars do you need? How many fucking houses do you need? How many buildings do you, like how much can you buy? And I understand people are thinking, okay, but it becomes generational wealth and da-da-da-da-da. But it's ludicrous. Like it's just, it's crazy.
You can't take any of that stuff with you through the gates of death, I always say.
Can I take a step back? So I understand we're talking about agriculture and globalism and all that stuff, but let's take a step back to actually, you know, I know what you're about, Darren, in terms of, you know, you and I have had many a phone call where we talk about, you know, how nature has all of the answers. And you mentioned earlier about us disconnecting from ourselves and the what's happening in the fact that we don't use nature, like you know, we're eating so much processed food, we don't turn to nature and we use, like, I want you to speak into how we use food to disconnect from ourselves and then what we can do to reconnect back with ourselves in terms of using food as that source.
Yeah. So we've been conditioned with the Industrial Revolution. We've been taken out of the fields, you know, and working on our own land and growing our own food and put into cities and industrial lots to produce items for consumption. And this has really happened in the last century and a bit, really. And so we have generations now being born completely disconnected from nature, where they're born into cities, they, you know, sit in neon cubicles, you know, they grow up in these classrooms, and they're taught to basically work somewhere in some industrial or factory production line, whether it's producing humans that think a certain way inside a certain box, or whether it's producing goods for consumption. So it hasn't, a century or more where we used to be working our own land and growing our own food and at least supplementing our own food from that land that we had. With the industrialization process and the desire to produce tertiary products that have a higher markup and a higher profit margin, and therefore an ability to ship them further so they're more stable, to have a longer shelf life, and then put them into packaging that's catchy. So there's catchy slogans and there's catchy colours. And because we've had to process them to increase the shelf life, we've stripped away the nutrient value, and that's where the flavour is. And so we have to put in artificial flavours, and we have to flavour them with processed sugars and fats, which just go rancid, because once you separate a fat from the plant fibre, it quickly goes rancid. So you've got rancid fats and you've got sugars pumping them up, and you've got artificial colours to make it look anything but other than grey slop. And artificial flavors and all of these things. And then you throw in artificial antioxidants to try and preserve, you know, that substance of that food a little bit longer, and artificial minerals that have been stripped out through the processing of the food. And we've now got this artificial substance, which is being sold with catchy slogans and jingles on television, that doesn't really have any nutrient value, because the light and the electrical energy which nature infuses into the natural food has been stripped out of them through the processing sequence, just basically by the law of entropy, which is for every physical or chemical change a substance undergoes, it undergoes a declining energy potential in accordance with the law of entropy. So the light, which is captured by the plant, which is information, which feeds consciousness, and the electrical current, which is supplied through the roots of the plant from the earth, which, you know, together light meets a photon, you know, a photon of light meets an electron, and the electron immediately jumps up to a higher activated energy level and is now capable of more, has more properties and more function than it ever did without that infusion of light. And so what we do is we process that food. We basically, through the law of entropy, those photons are lost, and the electrons, the electrical capacitance of that food, that plant, those plant cells, has been diminished. And so we're eating something that's greatly depleted, and with all the other artificial stuff added in to try and give it some semblance of taste and some semblance of nutrition, but none of which can do what the original substance was meant to do.
But the argument could be there, where people are like, but hold on a minute, in the past 100 years we're living longer.
We're not.
You don't think?
No.
In the past 100 years, we're cleaner, we're healthier, there's more of us. I mean, isn't the argument there? How can you say we're not? What do you mean we're not?
Well, because it's difficult to find the right information because there's a narrative being pushed, you know, through us or by us or around us, that the all-powerful medical profession and its wonders, one of which is vaccines, is the saviour of us and the responsible for us living longer. And, yeah, we might be living slightly longer in certain cases if that treatment, those treatments weren't there, but we're not necessarily living healthier.
Right.
And, in fact, it's debatable if we're living longer at all. But there are accounts. As I said, they're hard to find because you don't find them in mainstream media sources, where the pioneers, the settlers, the explorers would go into remote areas and meet indigenous tribes, and their average ages, you know, and spans of life were well and truly over 100 years of age, and they were still vital, over 100 years of age, still working the fields.
Mm-hmm. But there, you know,
wasn't, still had dark hair, still well muscled, all this type of stuff. Didn't have eye problems, didn't have cancers, didn't have tooth fillings in their, you know, holes in their teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's only when so-called white man or Western civilization came in that we to trade them for things like alcohol and tobacco, and then processed wheat, processed sugars, and all this type of stuff. And then their health deteriorated. And then they became open to infections and, you know, viral infections and bacterial infections that they weren't otherwise, you know, vulnerable to before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because we changed the nature of their microbiome, which is the seat of our immune system.
Okay, so let me ask this question then. So we know there's an issue. Everybody yep. knows, right? Yep. Okay, so what can we do? What, because you got people who are listening to this now, mums, dads, pops, you know, what can they start to do now that can start to reverse that or start to actively be a part, you know, in the role of turning this around?
Well, quite simply, we shape the planet, its industry, our health, our lives, and our consciousness by what we feed it. And we feed it not only by the things that we allow to come in through our sense doors. So what it is that we watch, the garbage that people watch on television, particularly in mainstream media and news sources, right? The garbage that comes in through their eyes and ears, right? So that's them feeding consciousness.
Yeah.
Which is structuring a belief system in them and building an image in consciousness, which they are projecting out into the ethers and shaping and building the world. And it's all being done for them, not by them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have not had, people don't even know where they end and the rest of it begins, you know?
Yeah.
So they're just being programmed by mass media.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're
saying there is switch it off.
Well, yeah. He's saying watch what you're taking in through your senses, and one of the senses is what we see and what we hear, right? Mm-hmm. And if we're seeing and hearing this, and it's not ours. Then it becomes, it comes a point where we don't know what is us and what's not us because we've taken so much information in from outside.
Yeah. So they have to definitely take the time, and this involves actual practice, to connect in with who they are. They have to connect in with who they are and switch all that other stuff off so they can start to hear that voice inside emerge. But at the same time, they then have to stop numbing themselves so they can feel what's going on there. They have to be prepared to feel. And so we numb ourselves with alcohol, we numb ourselves with caffeine, we numb ourselves with other stimulants like lots of chocolate, we numb ourselves with heavy, stodgy foods and all these types of things, all of which are unnatural.
Mm.
And you wouldn't be eating like that in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it stifles that voice inside of them and keeps them distracted, gives them massive dopamine hits, which keep them placated enough to to keep on towing the line in this system of mass slavery that we have all been unlawfully and unknowingly signed up for.
So, but so if we were to make it simple, what's something someone can start to do right now? I get off this podcast. I want something to do right now to start to do that.
Stop eating foods that are not real foods, because food literally programs consciousness, because food contains information which comes from, firstly, from the solar logos. Well, actually not firstly, because it comes from, let's not go that deep. It comes from the solar logos, you know, which is the sun, which powers all life in the solar system.
Right.
And that information is captured by the atmosphere of the Earth from the Van Allen radiation belts into the magnetosphere and through the biocondensing pure water layers in the atmosphere, acting like a capacitor, drops that energy information into the biosphere and charges all life. Mm-hmm. And that information is taken in by the plant, which grows the fruit or grows the seed, which we then eat as our nourishment.
Yeah.
That will connect you back in with those pure information streams, which is divinity itself, right?
Yeah.
Not tainted by the industry of man. And when I say man, I mean capital M. Not tainted by that industry, which is often tainted by greed, short-sightedness, massive myopia, and cruelty.
Right, right. So what we're saying is, because
what we're saying is that you've got to eat as close to nature as possible. Yeah.
From nature as they appear in nature.
Yeah, as they appear in nature. So trying not to alter them too
much. But
from
I think that is starting to happen. Like we are starting to head back there. Would you agree?
We are. More and more people are realizing that. And this is the thing. If anyone who's had to seriously heal themselves, anyone who hasn't just handed themselves over to the pharmaceutical cartels, which is basically just suppressing symptoms, right, and has truly engaged in a path of self-healing and emerge on the other side healed, knows unequivocally the importance of nutrition from whole food sources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the deeper you go, even better whole food sources are organic food sources or biodynamic food sources are even better, or the ones you grow yourself where you've been tending to the soil life.
Mm. But that's such a difficult, I've experienced, because you and I had many, many conversations over an 18-month period where I was doing raw vegan and it was exceptionally difficult, because you don't realise how addicted you are to, just in the simple matter of having hot food.
Yep.
Having hot food, you don't realise how addicted you are to wanting that. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing to want it necessarily anyway, but, I had made a choice to go raw vegan for a time, and the amount of emotional stuff that comes up for you when you're doing that is exceptionally confronting.
Well, because it's fucking generational. It's not just you and in this
me
lifetime.
Right now, this
it's
minute.
What you've brought forward.
Yes.
And that's what unnumbing does. It enables you to feel all that stuff which we keep quietly and comfortably suppressed by keeping the energies, the etheric energies, mm-hmm. which connect the etheric energies, which is the nearest subtle body to the physical body, are the connection between our astral nature, which is our mental emotional nature, and the physical body. And so when we stop consuming those energies with heavy, difficult to digest and difficult to process foods, right, we start to get a clearer connection in with our mental emotional faculties. And so all of that stuff comes flooding in where we've habitually blocked it out.
Yeah.
And so we have to, be prepared to feel that. And sometimes it takes several false starts and false steps for us to get our head around exactly what it is that we're facing and what we and how we have to prepare ourselves to meet it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make a few steps forward, we take a step back, we make another few steps forward, we take the step back, and that's just the process that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But what people really have to understand is that evolutionarily, we were rewarded in our brain with hits of dopamine for anything which supported our survival. So the two major triggers or positive feedback activities for that was reproduction, so sex. You know, so we had massive hits of dopamine and endorphins and pleasure sensations coming from the act of sex, because that allowed the species to reproduce.
Yeah.
And on the other end of that, at the other end of the tube that we are, is the mouth, and it's eating. So we have to be able to eat and supply lots of good quality nourishing food. And the foods which were richer in nutrients and richer in calories gave us the biggest dopamine hits.
Mm.
So that would naturally seek out those foods in order to ensure our survival.
Mm-hmm.
Now the marketers and the, you know, the people who chemicalize our foods and all this type of stuff, they know how this works. And so they produce foods, the artificial foods or the processed foods are loaded up with fat, and they're loaded up with sugar, and they're loaded up with starches and what have you, in order to give us calories and to give us that satiation, the dopamine hits. And then they load it up with other chemicals, which they know trigger the brain in those ways. So we get all this positive reinforcement from those foods, and we get dependent on these massive dopamine hits from these foods. To make us feel that we're okay and that we're alive and everything's okay. The problem is, through the law of dual effect, we have to keep, as the body keeps adapting to these this rich input, we kind of have to keep on upping the ante to feel like
it's like having a hit of cocaine. That first hit's fine, but then you need to have more to get the next and the next and the next. Yeah.
You have to be able to work in reverse now. What you have to do is start to remove those foods which give you these massive dopamine hits, and start to reset your brain and resensitize it to feeling great on less powerful dopamine hits. And then you start to normalize things again. But until you do that, just say you were to take out those heavy, stodgy foods, just say you eat junk food, you know, a lot, and you go on to just say eating fruit for a couple of weeks, you're going to feel beside yourself as you're not getting the same level of dopamine, you know, that, you know, your brain's going to be putting out, because your foods are less calorie dense and they haven't got all the brain stimulating chemicals in there. And you've literally have to resensitize your brain. And while you're running that gauntlet, people are literally going to be thinking, life's not even worth living. Like, what's the point of living if I can't have that food? And it's simply because of the brain chemicals that aren't being stimulated by their foods. But your microbiome will adjust, and at some point,
that's the when gut you bacteria. Emerge on
the gut bacteria. Yep.
Yep.
At some point, you emerge on the other side, and you feel better than you ever did before, and you actually come into true sense of what's happening in your body. So when you go back and you introduce one of those foods again, you feel it for what it actually really does in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have made that transition successfully, you'll say, there's no way I'm ever going to touch that again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would I ever touch that?
I was just doing a little bit of reading during the week. I know I've told you about a great author, Stephen Coulter, who's becoming really, really popular mainstream at the moment. But he was talking about dopamine, that they used to think that dopamine was the reward, but now they've just figured out that dopamine is the encourager, that you actually experience the dopamine before you have the hit of the food and not afterwards. So in actual fact, dopamine is the driver of us, and that's why dopamine happens, because it encourages us to do things and make efforts towards something.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yep. Yeah,
crazy.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, we could talk about this for weeks, Darren, but we have run out of time for today. So I know, you know, there's so many levels of what we could talk about. I'd love to have you back on again, because we can go into detail. I know you know the details about individual foods and what they do and how they help, what happens when you're like we just discussed, coming off all your addictions and stuff. And I know you've touched on a couple of other topics that we could just dive into. So I'd love to have you back on, Darren, so we can talk about some of that stuff down the track. Would that be awesome?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything else you want to finish up with, Mitch? I really wish we had more time to talk about this.
I love that sort of stuff. And it's good because it's important to – you have to keep Darren on a bit of a rein because we can head down
black – really random rabbit holes, which I love.
Crazy rabbit holes with Darren, which I love. And I mean, at the end of the day, like one of the reasons you do at STP, you do the diet for us prior to that, which is a really great diet – is so that people can actually – mental clarity – is so that people can actually sustain, because I remember the first time we had you up there when we were talking about this stuff, people, their addiction had them falling asleep because it's like the addiction doesn't want them to listen. Do you know what I mean? It's like, no. Yeah. It doesn't want you to listen because it wants you to stay in the addiction, you know, because you become the addiction, your subconscious mind is trying to get you to your deathbed safe. It has to protect that addiction, because that is your way of life. So a new way of life threatens your story, it threatens your addiction. And if your addiction is your way of life, then it's threatening your fucking life. I just wanted to say that having that opportunity to chat with you about this, and thank you for respecting the listeners at the moment and so that we don't dive too far down there. It's been great chatting with you yet again.
It's been so good, Darren. Thank you so much.
And your haircut's fantastic, buddy.
Thanks, mate. I'm
going to shave my head for the next one as well.
Awesome. You are not.
See you, champ.
See you, Darren.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.